Reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, 7th chapter, Knowledge of the Absolute, text number 26.
Vedaham samatittani
Vartamanani
sarjuna Bhavishyani chabuttani Mam tu vedana kaschana.
Translation. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me, no one knows.
This is Krishna. Krishna knows everything that has happened in the past. He knows everything that is happening in the present, and he knows everything that will happen in the future. And what do we know? Little. One of the big problems in this world is misunderstandings. Right? There are so many misunderstandings. We always feel misunderstood, or we always misunderstand people. Someone looks at you and sort of gives the evil eye, and you think, this person doesn't like me. Right? But maybe he just has a toothache. Right? Can be, or something like that, you know. When you just look at the whole world, like, I hate you, world, and then someone walks past and thinks, this person hates me. So many misunderstandings, constant. In fact, a lot of our time is spent setting things straight, you know. Reconciliation, they call it. Let's have reconciliation meetings and work it out, and we sit down and discuss and try. I didn't mean it like that, and you know, you didn't. It's like hours and hours, years of our lives are just spent to overcome misunderstandings. Why? Just because we don't know. We don't know what people think. We don't know what they feel. How are you today? You know, are you okay? You have to constantly ask. You know, we don't know. No idea. How different is Krishna? And how peaceful is Krishna? Can you imagine? All this insecurity, all this anxiety is not there. It is at Senior Ubayor Madhye, between two armies. Krishna and Arjuna were there. Krishna Prahasan, Arjuna Visidantam. Arjuna was lamenting, but Krishna was smiling. In the middle on a battlefield between two armies, to smile is somewhat unusual, right? To be, in other words, totally relaxed and very cool, that was Krishna. Yeah. Totally transcendental, not seeing anything to cause anxiety in this world. It's difficult. We read the Bhagavad Gita, and we hear the verses, Najayate mriyate vakadachin nayambutvavana vitabhuya. The soul never takes birth, the soul cannot be killed. And all these kinds of verses, we hear them and we say, yes, we agree. Yes, yes, I agree with this. And the next moment we're in total anxiety, right? Just in anxiety about something in this world. Basically, the Bhagavad Gita was just telling us, don't worry about this world at all. There's nothing to worry about. Just like Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the spiritual master of our founder, Acharya Srila Prabhupada, he once gave a lecture. And in that lecture, he basically says to people, so, are you convinced now about Krishna consciousness? And they all said, like, good audience, they all said, yes. And so he said, are you really convinced? Yes, 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 we are really convinced. And then, okay, the lecture finished, and then after the program, they were talking a little, and then people said, well, we have to go now. He said, go now? What do you mean? You were convinced. Huh? You were convinced. Where do you want to go? Huh? Where do you want to go? There's nowhere to go to. And you may think that there's a reason to go, but even if there is a fire, know that all those things that are burning in the fire, that anyway you had to give up your relationship with them. Because whatever can burn in fire you will have to give up your relationship with that. And whatever cannot burn in fire, that you will maintain. So it's like, that was getting intense, right? Everyone said, yeah, yeah, very nice. And then they all went home. Everyone again said, yes, we agree. And then they went home. That is the nature. So it is very interesting how we have different compartments in our head. One compartment in the head is totally convinced. Yes, yes, I believe this. Yes, I agree with it. But then the other part, we don't act upon it. We act totally in the opposite way, as if we don't understand the higher knowledge. It's very interesting how we can have these two sides in us that are totally contradictory, and it's totally okay to be like that. This is our position, but not Krishna. Krishna is truly transcendental, not just a little bit transcendental, but completely on the platform of the spiritual world. Krishna is really not considering this material world of much importance. What shall we say? I remember one Sunday feast lecture I gave in Switzerland, and it was about ants and how ants are always working. So I was interested in the psychology of the ant, right? What makes the ant work so hard? So if for a moment we make a parallel with our own life, we don't mind working 24 hours if it's really worth it, if it's something really important. So therefore we may assume that whatever the ants are working for, that it's very important to them. It means a lot to them. It's worth working 24 hours for. At night you wake up and you see the ants. In India you can see this more closely because their nature is a little closer. And you wake up and you see the ants are still moving around and working hard in the middle of the night. In the day, the ants are still working. You never find an ant sort of taking a break, lying on the beach, catching a little sun, you know, a little sporting or playing. Nothing like that. No football, nothing. Ants, right? They don't seem to enjoy. They just work. So basically, whatever they're doing, it must be very important to them, but to us, it's too insignificant to really spend much time with that. Okay, we put the ants in the spotlight right now, right? When was the last time we thought about ants, right? I mean, okay, you know, sometimes they get a little bit of a disturbance. We think about them, otherwise we don't think about ants. You don't read in newspapers about ants. There's not that much on the internet on ants in comparison to people. Ants are insignificant. So imagine the dreams of the ants. Do you know how long they live? I mean, something like 10 days. Huh? 10 days. And then it's all over. 10 days, and it was like, that's it. From, you know, you start off as all your hopes, all your dreams in 10 days. So short. Even a butterfly lives, I read the other day, 11 days for a butterfly. Once he's a butterfly. Maybe a little bit before. But very short lives. So many hopes, so many dreams in such a short time. And if we look at it like that, then we think, how is it possible? So Krishna looks at us in the same way. Krishna looks at our lives also, like, so short. And to us, it's like, Krishna looks at our dreams just like the ants' dreams. I know, sannyasis have this nature to pop bubbles. We are the guys, when everyone has a balloon, we come with a pin, you know. Pop, pop, bang, bang, bang. That is our duty, to kind of destroy illusions and to illusions about the material world, and to point towards Krishna, point towards the eternal. So at least we are not propagating that we give up the temporary, because it's not possible anyway. You can move from one place to another, but you can't give up the temporary world. We are in the temporary world. So, therefore, we are not speaking about giving up the temporary, but we're speaking about making relationships with the eternal. And that is really Krishna. Krishna is eternal. The spirit soul, the living being, is eternal. And the relationship with Krishna is also eternal. And that eternal relationship has now been covered. When Krishna says, mum tu vedana kaschana, ni, no one knows, he speaks about the living beings in this material world. In one sense. In the material world, no one knows Krishna. In the spiritual world, everyone knows Krishna. Of course, no one knows Krishna in full. That's not possible, because Krishna is unlimited. We cannot know Krishna in full, but still Krishna reveals himself to his devotee, and the devotee knows Krishna to be the Supreme Lord. So Krishna is behind everything. Ultimately, who is more important, the painting or the painter? Some might say that could cause a big debate. If you really start that, you could spend a whole Sunday afternoon debating it. You know, what is more important, the painting or the painter? Some might definitely say the painting, the painting. In modern philosophy and text interpretation, it's like that. They say, for example, if somebody writes a book, right, it's not what the writer meant with the book. That's not the essence. It's what the book is in itself. It's what the book means to the reader. That's what the book is. Therefore, it's not important what the writer tried to put in there. It's what the reader gets out of it. That's modern understanding. Of course, in our mind, at least in mine, that's a bunch of rubbish. That's a bunch of rubbish, because for me, it's the communication that counts. In the book or the painting, whatever, to go to a book, the book is the product of the writer's consciousness. So ultimately, it's the writer who's communicating something. And it's ultimately the writer. Even if a painting, you see something sublime in a painting, it means that there is something sublime in the consciousness of the painter. So it's in the person, really. It's the person who brings it. So the person really is more important. So if we take that to Krishna, there's a story that one time Srila Prabhupada was in the very early days when he came to the West. He started in a storefront in New York. That storefront, Matchless Gifts, we still have it. And it's just, it's about as wide as this temple, but up to, from here, from the altar to this first pillar, that part is less. So from the window to the pillar, that's Matchless Gifts, basically. And that was Prabhupada's first temple. And there's no partition, so you step in and you're just immediately in the whole temple. It's very nice, very spiritual atmosphere there, very powerful. If you ever go to New York, definitely go to this Matchless Gifts, because it's surcharged with spiritual energy. That place is vibrating. And so Prabhupada stayed there in such a small little temple, and then the buildings are a little higher, but it's sort of just like here, you know. There was a time that I stayed here for 5 months at a stretch, and I got so tired of that wall on the other side, you know. Just look out of that window and you see that wall. I got sick of that wall. I hated that wall. What to speak of New York, right? It's just, in New York there's always a wall. Everywhere there's a wall. You just... sky in Manhattan, it's just sky is somewhere, but difficult to see. So naturally, everyone wanted to get out of the city. So they went to the country ashram of Dr. Misra, and they were all camping outside, and these city boys of New York, they were in ecstasy, and they slept outside under the stars, and in the morning they woke up, and Hayagriva, who was a bit of a poet, a professor in English, he said it was as if an artist from his palette had made red streaks in the sky, you know, like a romantic vision of painting the sky. And Prabhupada just did the same thing I do. He popped the bubble. Right? He basically brought his pin in and like, poof, poof. And Prabhupada said, we're not so interested in the artwork, in the painting. We are more interested in the painter, Krishna. Right? So yes, but this is not at all what modern people would like. Because you see, actually even the traditional religions of the world, Christianity, Islam, or name it, right? They all have the same kind of concept. Just look at the old Germanic ideas. They had an idea of a heaven called Valhalla. And in that heaven, there was beer forever. Right? Beer forever. So, it's a great thing. And then in Islam, you get so many maidens in the heavens, right? Very nice. And in Christianity, you get a white dress, a harp, or a trumpet. So, that's also nice. You can have a jam session. Right? So, you know, according to your preference, you can go to a different heaven. Yeah? If you're into beer, then you go to the Valhalla. Or if you want the maidens, then you go there. Or if you're a musician, you know, Gopinath, then you can get a white dress, a harp, or a trumpet. Forever. Yeah? Forever. And that's heaven, basically. And in heaven, you can enjoy. Right? Because the whole idea is when you finally go to heaven, it's wonderful because you enjoy there forever. Oh yeah, and I forgot to tell, God lives there too. But it doesn't really matter. It's all right. Because he doesn't disturb anyone. No, he doesn't bother anyone. Exactly. He lives in his own corner somewhere, off to the side. You rarely see him. Sometimes he walks by and he's kind of a nice old chap. He's like, really? He doesn't get on anybody's case. He just lets everyone enjoy. Yeah? He doesn't interfere with anyone's enjoyment and so on. So it's really nice, heaven. You know? God lives there too. Yeah? Yeah? And that's more or less how it is, right? In most traditions of the world. So, people really want the kingdom of God without God. Yeah, that's what they want. Modern man is saying, you know, in the past you read things like building a staircase to heaven and things, you know. Big demons tried it. And even Led Zeppelin had a staircase to heaven also. So, staircases to heaven have been tried from time to time. Right? But, nowadays, we've decided that we don't need a staircase to heaven anymore. We're going to make heaven on earth. Right? That is our aim. We're going to fix it up, and with technology, whatever is wrong, we can make up for it, compensate for it, fix it, and in the end, everything is just perfect. And we have reached what the angels have right here on this planet. Right? We don't need wings, because we can fly with electronics, right? And it will get better all the time. Just wait a while. So like this, we are trying to create a heaven on earth. But Prabhupada had a different concept about it. He called it Fool's Paradise. He called this world Fool's Paradise. So we see the underlying theme of the lecture. It keeps on coming back on the same point. The point that how much faith are we going to put in the material energy? It is difficult to do so. because the material energy, the Greeks already figured it out. They said, pantarei, everything is always streaming, right? Like everything is always changing, like a river. And it said you cannot step into the same river twice. Yeah? In other words, we enjoy something in this world, and it's good, it's really good. Have you also gone through this, like you had the perfect pizza, and it was just, it was a dream pizza, right? Everything right, and then you want like another piece. It's just not as good as the first piece. It's not quite there. It's not the same dream pizza anymore. Sometimes you get two dream pieces, even three. Who knows? Then you think, now I've got it figured out. Now I've got the secret. Now I've got the formula. But then, you know, everything changes. So this is, of course, in the 60s, a philosophy was developed, which was called, by someone, Richard Alpert, who had been to India. His name was Ramdas Baba. And he developed the concept of be here now. Be here now. And be here now basically meant just that don't worry. Let things change. Just go with the changes. Go with the flow. Go with the groove, right? It's groovy. Just groove. Stay in the groove. The groove of the disc was you used to have these old players, you know, music players. You have to put the needle on top, and then it gradually moves to the middle, right? And that's how it was. So stay in the groove. Go with the changes. Just. Yes, when the good things change, go for the new good things. And in this way, always relish the good things. And I thought, now we've got the secret. So, that's okay. But I see some of these hippies now, and they're still hippies, but they look really old. They get to kind of wrinkled faces, and long hairs, and beards, and everything. And then, I don't know how you call those ribbons on the sticks, you know. You can throw up in the air and they make different, and I see them there for hours, you know. And it reminds me of the 60s when they were looking for hours in the kaleidoscope, you know, the different patterns. And I'm thinking like, and now they make the things, the ribbons in the sky. And I'm thinking like, whew, you know, isn't that a bit childish for somebody who's closer to 70 than 60? It gets a bit over. It begins to look a little stupid. Yeah. At least in my eyes, right? It's like nothing changed. Right? It was maybe okay when you were 20. It sort of looked like fun. But when you're 60, it starts to look pretty dumb. Right? So, like that, time moves along. And I saw a little cartoon, and it said that, and then they lived happily ever after. And after that, everything was okay. Except for the old age thing. And then you see these two old people sitting in bed, sort of, right? Yeah. I mean, that's there. So sooner or later, we have to face the reality of time. Time is the most powerful force in this world. They think that the most powerful energy is nuclear energy, but that's not a fact, because even nuclear energy will be destroyed by time. All their nuclear power plants will be destroyed by time. And even the radioactive waste, which is staying toxic for 300,000 years, for time, it's nothing. Poof, finished your power. So the biggest power that exists in this world is the power of time. And it's interesting because I'm here and I see the power of time working on the audience. Because I see people here that I've known for quite some time, actually. And I see how you are changing. That. Here's Gopinath. Yeah? I knew him from Vrindavan when he was half. Now he has, you know, a little more. Yeah, he was about half, no? Really. But a voice like a Gandharva, like an angel, right? Singing very nice, and he still sings very nice. I think he should lead to kirtan at the end. Huh? Will you do that? Okay, that's another symptom of time, Gopinath. Yeah, together with the thing in the back and in the knee and, you know, and all the other things, yeah. But my grandmother has a great remedy about that, you know. It's like, and before we know it, we're talking about disease and medicines, right? Then you know, the time is moving along. So, today, here in this place, this is about the only place where we got all the time of the world. Because here, we're looking at things from the perspective of eternity. Yeah. And this afternoon, for a moment, don't worry. We don't have to go anywhere. It is not required. There's nothing really to do. Everything is already attained. Yeah. Everything that is there to do is already done. We're here. We are here. We have come to the spiritual world. We are there. It is the temple. It is none different from Vrindavan. Krishna is here. Right? He's here. There's nothing lacking here. Right? Everything is perfect. There's no beauty in the world greater than the beauty of Krishna. There is no wealth in the world that is greater than the wealth of Krishna. There is nothing more wonderful than Krishna. Everything you could possibly dream, all the dreams you haven't dreamt yet, you can dream them here. Because here, you've attained perfection, isn't it? Some say Hari Bol, and some are thinking like, let's get out of here before it gets even more fanatic. Yeah? Some say, well, I'll stay for the feast, but then straight after, I'll be right out the door. Yes, so all that is going on. But with spiritual vision, one can understand that it is true, actually. The idea of my talk is to awaken a little bit of spiritual vision. And I'm supposed to throw a whole bunch of words at you, and with that, play with your mind like a ball, which I bounce against the wall until it slowly gets softer. And then you sort of walk out, and then I hope that for the whole week a little bit of Krishna pops up in your brain every once in a while, you know, sort of think about eternity, about time, and that we see the world. Just like some people think that there is the Bhagavad Gita and that it's a book. Some people would say this is a book. Would you say it's a book? I've done this before, so you already know this trick. You have been around, I know that. Alex Alejandro, he is our big book distributor, sitting right here in the front. Is it a book, Alejandro? Is this a book or is it not a book? It's a book. He says, it's a book. I say, Alejandro, it's not a book. Right? I mean, can you see it in the back? This is not a book. Right? It's not. You know what it is? It's a way of life. Right? It's a way of life. Bhagavad Gita as it is. The world is also Bhagavad Gita. Everywhere we see Bhagavad Gita. And what I hope is that when we leave this temple, that we see a little bit of Bhagavad Gita out there. And that when we walk in the street, that we see a little bit of Kurukshetra for a moment. We remember Krishna was on, and Arjuna on the battle of Kurukshetra. We on the battlefield of Amsterdam. Krishna and Arjuna between the chariots on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. We on the white line between the chariots of Amsterdam as we're crossing the street. Can maybe just like Arjuna remember the eternity for a moment. He was forgetting, but Krishna reminded him. And we also can just see. And then, if you look at all these cars from the perspective of eternity, then you're thinking, in line with Prabhupada, who was in New York and was imitating the sounds of the cars. Whoosh, whoosh, whoosh. He said, going at neck-breaking speed and not making any progress. Not making any progress. Nothing. So, yes, Prabhupada about cars, didn't have a very high opinion about cars, because he was thinking that before people used to make friends with their neighbors, but now they make friends with people that live 50 kilometers away. And it's like friends here and there, and they have to drive everywhere and always sit in the car. And we think we go so fast and we save so much time. But if you add it all up, we don't save any. Nowadays with traffic jams especially, and with no parking space, so much time, even more time it takes. I was in Sydney last year, and they said that they had calculated that from the center of Sydney to the to a particular suburb in 1930, used to take 45 minutes with a horse cart, and now it takes 45 minutes with a BMW. It's the same. Nothing has changed. It still takes 45 minutes. Of course, you know, there was a time when Belgium was like far away. It was a long journey. You know, if you have to go with your horse and cart to Antwerp, you're not going to do it in one day. You know, it would be too much for the horse. You have to stop. It's a couple of days' journey, right? And now we can do it in a few minutes. We just, in 20 minutes you can fly over Antwerp and land in Amsterdam, if you come at full speed. So, like this, we're living in the so-called global village, and everything is like that. Distances have become short, and the one culture in the world, blue jeans and Mickey Mouse and the same food and everything. What shall we say? Burgers. So the whole world is just going down the tube. Literally, in London you see people going down in the morning, they're running into the tube. Right? And at night they come back flying out, and it is as if it's a big vacuum cleaner, slurping up all these people, put them in the factory, into the offices and behind their computers, and at night, slurped up by a tube, and then spit it back out. You spit out all these people, and then they can go home. So, this is what we have made of the world. This is actually what man is making of the world. And now Amsterdam, with great pride, has to have a subway as well, although it's very difficult in a city where the groundwater level is so high that it's practically an underwater subway, right? But we pride ourselves to also have one, right? The first underwater subway in the world, right? Is what we may as well make it under the sea, right? Because the groundwater level in Holland is not very, very deep, you know. So, I have to pump out all the water. What a mess. And we are going to have one too, to keep up with the Joneses. And the whole world is keeping up with the Joneses, keeping up with the neighbors. That's what it means. And in the end, there's no world left. Like the that nice poster, which is called The Happy Happy Home. And it just looks like a nice little house with a garden on planet Earth. And it's a nice poster of planet Earth. The only thing is that of planet Earth, there is only one piece left, like one piece of the cheese, right? Like one of those points. That's all that's left. The rest has fallen off. Right. Yeah. So, we're living a way of life, making far too much out of the temporary. And we're trying to artificially build up the temporary. And in this way, we've become destructive. And we drive around in our cars, poisoning the very air that we breathe. Isn't that weird? We enjoy driving in a machine that fumigates us, basically. What if you would drive here in a fumigation machine here in this house? A fumigation machine is a machine that puts poison gas here to get rid of all the insects. And we just walk around this house here. That's insane. It's suicidal. Well, what's 6 million cars in Holland gonna do for you? I read yesterday, I saw a newspaper here, and it said that Amsterdam is one of the most polluted, or Holland, mind you, one of the most polluted countries in Europe. They say because the density of the population. So we are at the top in Europe, actually, in terms of pollution. You may not have known. Yeah, you might have known. What? Anyway, Holland's way up there. And of course, we already knew that we had the most toxic rivers because we get the junk of everybody else, right? By the time the Rhine comes in Holland, Switzerland dumped their junk, Germany dumped theirs, France put a little bit of that as well, and then, you know, from Belgium comes the Schelde. So, and we get all that, yeah? So we get all the junk of Europe already in our rivers. So, home sweet home. Anyway, it's like after our national celebration, we can think like that. Yeah? A little bit. We celebrated the national glory, so today I should, you know, balance it out a little bit, I think. Yeah, I guess the most tamasic thing I saw yesterday, or the strongest manifestation of the mode of ignorance, was a guy who, instead of a garland, instead of a flower garland, he hung a toilet seat around his neck. I thought that's a flower garland in the mode of ignorance. Huh? So that was something. You see some things sometimes that you just. So we saw some manifestation of tamagun. What to do? All right, I will not belabor the point. I think let us try, and throughout this coming week, from time to time, remember the divine perspective. Let us for a moment look at this world with the eyes of God. And let us just realize that God is eternal. And how does this world look from the point of view of eternity? let us from time to time contemplate that. And if we do that, I think then we are really seeing things through the eyes of the Bhagavad Gita. And then gradually, the Bhagavad Gita is not a book, but it becomes a way of life. Is this a book? It's not a book. It's a way of life. You can try it on the street for a while. You just stop a guy and say, "What is this? What is this? Please tell me." Right? And you say a book, and you just say, "No, it's not. It's a way of life." I don't know. Maybe it works. Who knows? Spark off some interest. Any questions? Any comments? Yeah, the painter and the painting. Yeah. Well, ultimately, the painter, it's his energy. And the painting is, it's not that the painter is the energy of the painting. Huh? So, the painter can create more paintings. The painter has it in him. It came out of him. So therefore, whatever we find in the painter, in the painting, is somewhere having its roots in the painter. Yeah. So the painter has a quality by which he could produce the painting. So if we connect, so it's really the quality of the painter that is more important than the painting. That's the idea behind. Of course, in one sense, the painter is also manifest in his painting. We're encountering the painter in his painting. That is true. But if you just look at the painting without the painter, it's incomplete. Yeah. Like, what's Van Gogh? No? What's Van Gogh? Yeah. The paintings of Van Gogh are okay, but it's also the whole, the madness of Van Gogh and the whole personality and that like far out kind of consciousness he had, you know, this different kind of look, the mystery that he is, right? And how he even cut his ear. My God, why did he cut his ear, right? So many things can be said about it, different ideas. Why did he do it? What was the rationale? How he lived in the south of France, and all the houses yellow. So it's like, if the personality wasn't there, it wouldn't have the same kind of charm. It's like, just wait a while. You don't have to surrender to me. You can still argue back if you want. You're surrendering too easy. I know you're not really like that. Yeah, I know. You're just cooperating for the Sunday feast is not necessary. I'm sorry. No, just like take the Rembrandt paintings, you know. They're basically stupid paintings. I mean, just of regions, they have no message. They're beautiful pictures, absolutely beautiful. But there's not much. Here's some guy sitting there with his big collar and his big suit, being rich and being powerful, being a politician and wanting to have his picture painted. And we have to look at it. There's absolutely no deeper message in the whole thing. It's just some arrogant rich guy that paid a lot of money to have his picture painted, and very well done, extraordinarily well done, but it's totally mundane. But with Van Gogh, you know, there is some hope of another dimension added in the painting. So that adds more. So we're looking at what's behind. So it adds a whole dimension. The person Krishna, what is in the person Krishna? And it said in the same way, if we see the material world, we should take it that if you see beauty in this world, take it as the smile of Krishna. So there's a lot more beauty in Krishna than there's in this world. Because the smile, right, is only a welcome invitation. I mean, a little smile is like, yes, it's okay, come, welcome. The smile, nice. But that's not everything. There's a lot behind the smile. There's a whole universe behind the smile to find out. A whole spiritual world to find out behind the smile of Krishna. So let us understand the beauty in this world is the smile of Krishna, an invitation to experience the unlimited spiritual world. So that's the spiritual purport of the, it was only an analogy anyway. Sorry for all the, anyone else? Okay, well, it's a little early. I can just... Huh? Oh, you always have a question. Yeah.
The verse was reading that Krishna knows everything about the future.
Krishna knows everything about the future.
How can he enjoy because he knows it all?
Yeah, but therefore he doesn't. He only enjoys... He doesn't enjoy anything material. He doesn't enjoy this world. But he enjoys... In Golok, because in Golok he doesn't know everything about the future due to Yoga Maya. There's the, Krishna knows past, present and future. But in the spiritual world, Krishna allows himself to become covered by his own illusory energy so that he doesn't know the future. He knows and he doesn't. Sometimes he knows, but sometimes he doesn't. When a devotee comes up to Krishna and says to Krishna, Krishna! What have I got in my hand? Krishna doesn't reply, look, I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I am all-pervading. I already knew what you put in your hand before you even thought of it. You think you can surprise me? Nobody ever surprises me. It's not like that. He allows himself to become covered by his own yoga maya, by his own illusory energy, and then he really doesn't know what the devotee has in his head. He doesn't know. No idea. But here in this world, he knows everything. Everything. Yeah. So here there are no surprises for Krishna, and therefore in the material world, Krishna doesn't enjoy the material energy. Nothing for him to enjoy here.
So according to that, what would be the choice of Arjuna actually not to fight in the Kurukshetra fight?
Yeah. There is a choice, right? Again, the living entity has the choice to serve Krishna or to not serve Krishna. As soon as we serve Krishna, we also come under that Yoga Maya energy together with Krishna. And then we go in the realm where Krishna doesn't know and where there is, and where we have independence, we can change our destiny. But before that, we are simply under karma and everything predestined. Yeah. So as long as we are in the material world, everything predestined. That's it. It's all by karma. Prakriti kriyamanani guna karmani service. All going on by the three modes of material nature. Here we don't really make choices. We just, it's all one big Pavlov reflex, actually. You know, Mr. Pavlov and the rats and the three little tunnels, and then door number one, put some food and the doors are made of metal. Then the second day the rat came back and thought like, oh great, you know, go straight to gate number one. And Dr. Pavlov put some electricity on gate number one, you know. So this rat comes, and didn't go back to gate number one, tried two and three, but never number one again. Right? So the whole world is actually a big Pavlov reflex, right? Where We are just responding like the rat. And this is called the learning process. Education, we call that. Yeah. Yes, I see. Yeah. We can only surprise Krishna and then?
In this world, by choosing
Krishna. Yeah, yeah. If we become devotees, then gradually, as we become more and more advanced, Krishna will start to allow himself to become covered. But not for ordinary devotees. One must be like a liberated devotee. So at this point, we cannot. But Krishna gives us the freedom of choice. Yes. Yeah. So with his devotee, ultimately Krishna doesn't know everything. But he may know almost everything. Still. Just like Arjuna, Krishna said, I know past, present and future. Krishna also says, I know all the births you and I have taken, I can remember them, you cannot. So this is Krishna in his position of God, the all-powerful, the all-knowing. But when Krishna is the cowherd boy with his residence of Vrindavan, then he becomes also covered by forgetfulness sometimes. Yeah. You're speaking soft and I cannot hear soft. Yeah, in the spiritual world, past, present and future are not existing in that same sense. Although there is obviously some concept, but it is not necessarily all going in a nice sequence. But there is the beginning of the day, the end of the day, going and coming back, right? And there is doing one thing and then the next, right? It's not all chaotic. There's a sequence. Krishna leaves Vrindavan and he walks out of the house and he walks down the path and he gets to the border of Vrindavan and everyone follows him to that point. So there's still sequence. We would still say, well, he left the house. And then he passed this and this tree. And then he passed the lake. And then he came by the hill. And then he went around the curve. And then he disappeared into the forest. So it all comes in sequence. And it's not... So there is a sequence. Sequence of events. Sequence. But it's not like in the same sequence of time as here. How to understand? Impossible. Impossible. We cannot understand. Because we cannot think beyond time. We can theoretically say there is a world in the spiritual, there is no time. But we cannot imagine it. Here everything is ruled by time. So, best answer is, wait till you get there and you'll see how there is no time. Because here it's too much for us. We cannot think outside of time, even if we try. I hear things on the altar. Maybe it's time. I see also people yawning, so I think maybe it's overtime. So let us stop. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I hope Gopinath will somehow or other manage to overcome his handicap.
Продолжение следует...